Noam Chomsky was probably the most prominent exponent of principled opposition to American involvement in the Second Indochina War. As the foremost radical critic of American foreign policy, the anti-imperialist scholar's marginalization and liberal consensus that followed the Vietnam War created a vacuum in the far left of the American political spectrum. The Harvard professor's subsequent opposition to the Soviet-backed Vietnamese invasion that ended starvation and slaughter under the Pol Pot regime in Cambodia only served to further isolate the quasi-Marxist academic from the political mainstream. For the peace movement, the Second Indochina War had been the seminal experience of the post-1945 era, and a transition to a new era had begun in 1975. The North Vietnamese, Provisional Revolutionary Government, Pathet Lao, and Khmer Rouge were symbols, as were no others, of a new world order the West must accept. In the weeks following its ascension to power, the character of the Khmer Rouge government had become apparent, and the New York Times was already accusing them of genocide. If complicity in genocide was a part of this new order, this possibility was embraced by certain elements of the peace movement with the same ardor and passion they had denounced American and U.S.-backed atrocities during the war. By 1979, most of these groups had become disaffected, but those that had not, mostly the Marxist-Leninist and anti-imperialist left, continued in a kind of blood pact with the Cambodian genocidists into the 80s. The Khmer Rouge spurned normal diplomatic channels and addressed Western public opinion through the informal apparatus of the Solidarity Movement. A 1970 trip by Chomsky to Vietnam and Laos had been arranged by Fred Bramfman, co-director in 1975 of the Indochina Resource Center. The Washington and Harvard-based Protestant-sponsored IRC was an adjunct to the peace movement, as far as the movement had any organization, and acted as a mouthpiece for the Vietnamese PRG and political ancillary of the Khmer Rouge. Shortly after the Khmer Rouge takeover of Cambodia, the IRC organized a New York reception for Pol Pot's deputy premier, Yang Sari, attended by more than 100 members of groups that had opposed the war in Indochina. The Khmer Rouge also engaged in party to Marxist-Leninist party relations. The Canadian Communist League, a Montreal-based Maoist cell, visited Cambodia in the weeks preceding the 1979 invasion and continued to work with the Cambodian genocidists into the 80s as part of the Canadian Cambodia Support Committee. The 1979 Vietnamese invasion of Cambodia could be explained, it could not be justified, according to Chomsky. Cambodia had been completely closed to the outside world between 1975 and 1979. If, as supporters maintained, the Pol Pot regime had overcome the dire consequences of the U.S. war by 1978, Vietnam, according to radical left development theory, had sunk deeper into post-rupture with China-Soviet-style revisionism. And Hanoi, forced by the failure of its economy, seized the pretext of border atrocities by the Khmer state to annex its western neighbor. The leading proponent of radical left dependency theory in the late 70s was Malcolm Caldwell, a British academic assassinated in Phnom Penh in 1978. According to the radical left economist and friend of the Pol Pot Politburo, the tertiary sector of Phnom Penh, the Cambodian capital, was parasitic and forcing the entire population into the hinterland to grow rice was necessary to feed the country. The New York Times estimated that tens of thousands of Cambodians had perished in the weeks following the 1975 takeover as a direct result of this policy. Ultra-left dependency theory, however, saw Pol Potism as a rejection of the Western model of development, which it decried as both imperialist and genocidal. The precipitous evacuation of Cambodia's cities in the days following the fall of the U.S.-backed republic, according to supporters of the regime like Chomsky and Caldwell, had been entirely justifiable. The country's tertiary sector, comprised of a Sino-Khmer and Vietnamese mercantile class, as actuaries of foreign business, facilitated the extraction of surplus value from Cambodia and the dismantlement of such foreign implantations, which radical left development theory held was a drain on the country's scarce resources, had been an urgent priority for the post-war authorities. By 1979, Khmer Rouge rustication policy had reduced Cambodia's Sino-Khmer population of 425,000 by half. Michael Vickery, Chomsky's principal source on demographic trends in post-war Cambodia, now estimates 80,000 people died in the first weeks of Khmer Rouge rule. The human cost of what ultra-left development theory held was a rapid and necessary, if brutal, proletarianization of Cambodia's bourgeoisie. At his New York reception, Yang Sari estimated that the population of Phnom Penh had swollen from 2 to 3 million preceding the Khmer Rouge takeover. At least 15,000 deaths had resulted from malnutrition in the city, and the lives of hundreds of thousands of Phnom Penhese and refugees depended on the urgent arrival of massive humanitarian relief. Three different Red Cross and Red Crescent organizations from non-aligned countries had sent medicines to Thailand for transport to Cambodia after the takeover, and two planes were waiting in Bangkok. Plane loads of food and medicine donated by French humanitarian groups were also standing by, and UNICEF had 130 tons of powdered milk, 15 tons of high-protein food supplement, and medical equipment ready to be airlifted when permission was received. Acts then commissioned by the Cambodian Politburo resulted in massive suffering and led ineluctably to the deaths of tens of thousands of people in the next weeks. The Cambodian ambassador to Beijing explicitly refused the Canadian offer of wheat to alleviate famine conditions, and offers by the Save the Children Foundation and Japanese government, along with food and medicine from Thailand, were similarly rejected. Despite repeated requests by the French government that a plane it held in Vientiane for the evacuation of the sick be allowed to land in Phnom Penh, all offers of aid were refused, and the Khmer Rouge began evicting 20,000 hospital patients into the streets of the capital, compelling the entire population at gunpoint, sick and wounded included, to march into the countryside at the height of the dry season, with no provision for medical care or water, and little food. The entire country was similarly rusticated during the next days, and millions of Cambodians forcibly marched for weeks and months, many to remote work sites in the countryside. For For proponents of radical left development theory, it was colonialism, together with the consequent integration into the international capitalist system as the dependent marginal element that was responsible for Cambodia's backwardness. Ultra-left dependency theory held that this problem could not be solved by further incorporation in that system. The cycle of underdevelopment could only be broken, radical left theory stipulated, by withdrawing from the world economy and restructuring on a self-centered basis. François Panchaud, the leading expert on Cambodia in 1975, had originally been sympathetic to the Khmer Rouge Revolution, but after interviewing hundreds of participants in the evacuation, became convinced that a large part of the deported population had been sacrificed to build up the infrastructure with their own flesh and blood. Radical left development theory held that such costs had not been unknown in the history of industrialization in the West or elsewhere in the developed world, and that vast social changes were imperative to overcome centuries of injustice and oppression. All artificial implantations, the theory held, had to be dismantled quickly and without enormous foreign assistance. Chomsky was highly critical in the late 70s of what he called the free world model for third world development. This model is characterized by the professor as an inherently genocidal three-dimensional structure expanding in all three directions. Polpotization, whatever its character, was relative to the absolute nature ascribed to the free world model. Rejection of humanitarian aid by the Pol Potists, according to the regime's supporters, was a categorical, if doctrinaire, refusal of any accommodation with the free world. Radical theory holds that American economic success is not a product of capitalist liberal social policy, but of U.S. imperialism. Consequently, by rejecting the free world model for development, the third world, as an uncontrollable externality of the American empire, would provoke a financial crisis within the United States. The material facts of this change would force a radical reassessment of liberal social policy. Since the late 50s, Vietnamese communism had been revisionist, estranged from its Chinese progenitor, and resigned to coexistence with Soviet and Western capitalism. Prior to repudiating the Maoist model, the former French colony instituted a bloody land reform overseen by Chinese advisors. The North Vietnamese 1953 population classification convulsed the Vietnamese communists, and a long process of de-Stalinization began in 1957. Ultra-left dependency theory interpreted this Vietnamese rejection of Chinese-style reforms as a lack of resolve, while agrarian reform in post-war Cambodia, as black to white, was the most radically egalitarian socio-economic system ever imposed in a country. Chomsky has long advocated a spiritual transformation, such as those social thinkers from the left Marxist tradition have always emphasized. The professor is explicit about the means to this transformation: an attack on the fundamental structure of state capitalism and the system of domination at its control, private control over resources. What happened in Ho Chi Minh's post-colonial Democratic Republic of Vietnam and Pol Pot's Cambodia in 1975 was such an attack. The transcendental nature of the social changes in 1975 Cambodia required expulsion of almost all foreigners. Only Chinese 707s carrying technicians and telecommunications equipment were allowed to land at Phnom Penh following the takeover. Whatever other purposes Khmer Rouge rustication policy putatively served, deportees were classified according to class background at sorting centers, and many of those who acknowledged or were accused of having non-peasant backgrounds were purged, and the country effectively restructured economically. Chomsky told the Fourth Committee of the UN General Assembly in the weeks preceding the 1979 Vietnamese invasion that international reaction to the events in post-war Cambodia revealed the emptiness and hypocrisy of much of the concern for human rights, which he charged had moved to stage center just at the moment when the luster of classical colonialist and interventionist ideologies had dimmed. Whatever the situation in Cambodia, the committee heard, it was beyond the reach of Western human rights activists. Chomsky also claimed to have reviewed evidence on Cambodian atrocities and concluded that sources on these had little credibility. Reaction was immediate, and the Harvard professor was denounced as an apologist for genocide. Chomsky and the Maoist left claimed in the 70s that Cambodian refugees were primed and otherwise suborned by the CIA and the U.S.-backed regime in Thailand to fabulate atrocity stories, and they dismissed accounts by Cambodian deponents of horrific privation and mass killing under the Khmer Rouge as fabrications invented for a sensationalist press. Refugees questioned by Westerners and Thais, Chomsky maintained, had a vested interest in reporting atrocities on the part of the Cambodian revolutionaries and reported what they believed their interlocutors wished to hear. If massacre reports were false and testified to the extreme unreliability of refugee accounts, according to Chomsky and The Nation in 1977, credible reports, and there were many, the professor claimed, exonerated the Pol Pot Politburo and indicated that extrajudicial killing was localized in areas of limited Khmer Rouge influence and unusual peasant discontent. If the Khmer Rouge were responsible for anything, the professor held, it was for lowering the ambient level of violence and not increasing it. The ostensibly classless nature of the new social order under Pol Pot explained the horror and indignation of the urban bourgeoisie at its practices, Chomsky said. And it was this supposed prejudice against socialism, according to the Harvard professor, that biased reports in the closed country. Chomsky claimed in the 70s that the worst terror in Cambodia had ended by 1977. Something happened, however, early that year in the Khmer Rouge Politburo, and whatever inhibitions it had previously had disappeared. The killing in the country took a systematic quality, and hundreds of thousands were methodically purged. And if Chomsky claimed in the 80s that as few as 50,000 Cambodians had been executed in 1975 to 1979, the actual figure was probably over 350,000 and possibly as high as 500,000. In 1978, China delivered jet fighters to the Khmer state, and Vietnam invaded shortly afterwards, ending the bloody social experiment under the Khmer Rouge. Chomsky's resuscitation in the 90s demonstrates the power of ideology. It also demonstrates the failure of the radical left to present any kind of relevant opposition to the liberal social agenda of the mainstream political parties. There have been many attempts to instill class consciousness in the American polity. The dream of a classless society, as expounded by Chomsky, became a nightmare. A nightmare the left has yet to wake up from.